This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's a guy who can give us some insight into everything that's not going on right now in Major League Baseball with all of the non-signings of at least the key guys and other fellas who are sitting out there still looking for jobs. It's Maury, and he joins us right now in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Maury, thank you for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Hey, Maury.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
First of all, everybody seems to be up in a little hissy that you're sitting there with Bryce Harper and with Manny Machado still looking for teams as spring training is underway. First of all, are you surprised by it? And second of all, why is this the case right now?
Well, first of all, with those two guys, it might not be such of a surprise given that the two of them are kind of linked together. I do begin to wonder whether the agents for those guys are really trying to see which one's going to get a deal first, and that might set the market for the other. But it is concerning that we're, we have pitchers and catchers reporting. Pretty soon we're going to have position players there. It is surprising, I suppose, in some senses that we're this late. Scott Boras has been known, and he's the agent for Bryce Harper, to kind of extend things out, but I didn't think it was going to be this long.
Well, why do you think owners are spending less?
Well, the owners have said, and Rob Manfred, basically as a proxy for all the owners, said to me that they saw the analytics of this going into the last labor deal, and the one that we're in now that's in its second year. So, in some ways, they think that they're seeing that the value of younger players, they're getting more out of those younger players than they do spending on veteran free agents where they might get some decline years out of it. Well, I mean, that's really convenient. I mean, you're going to save a bunch of money that way as well. So that's the argument that they're making, that they're getting more value out of younger guys and that the value of some of these long-term deals for veterans are really probably not working out for them. But, guys, the only thing I would say about that is both of those players, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, are younger. So, I guess if you want to quibble over whether 10 years or 8 years is there, but there's a bunch of other guys out there, whether it's Dallas Keuchel or whether it's Craig Kimbrel, and there's a bunch of other guys out there that don't fit into that mold, basically, that we're discussing when it comes to Bryce Harper and Manny Machado.
So what you naturally go to, Maury, if you're a fan looking at this, it's like, well, the owners are – it's collusion. The owners are trying to knock down the salaries and blah, blah, blah. Is that it? Or do the players have an overinflated sense of what they are worth on the open market?
Well, probably a little bit of both here. And look, first of all, I don't think this is going to ever get any kind of true collusionary thing. I think that the way that even the Players Association has said it is groupthink. I mean, you have to prove it, and I think that Rob Manfred's smart enough to know that if the owners are colluding together, saying let's get together and do this, they know what happened with that last time, and it basically they lost a whole bunch of money and a lot of goodwill. But I think that some of the players do think that they're worth more based upon how the market has been. The Players Association has said we need to change this market. And I do know that they are focusing, though, if the owners are focusing on younger players, the Players Association is going to try and figure out how to get more money for those younger guys that then cascade into free agency. But that doesn't happen until 2021 when the labor deal expires, and they don't have a heck of a lot to offer, minus going on strike. And we know how that has played out in years past. That hasn't exactly been a good look for baseball.
So is this the kindling to work stoppage? What is it, 2021?
This is a
little bit of the fire that could start it?
Yeah, I mean, this is really, unprecedented. The players have started to – they set aside all of their licensing money. So if you buy a jersey with a player's name on it, part of that goes back to the players. And so all that licensing money is being held in case, as a war chest, basically, if they start to lose paychecks. You could have a work stoppage you know, from December until February, and, you know, fans would be upset about it, but you're not losing games. And if it goes longer than that, of course, then you're getting into something really serious. And I would be hopeful, and I think that both Rob Manfred and the players understand this. Look, everybody's gotten really rich due to this. And it's very difficult to say, you know, with an average salary of around $4 million across the entire breadth of the players, that it just becomes difficult to say, let's go on strike over it. But, you know, if they have to, they say they will.
Maury Brown's joining us, sports business reporter. You can read his work at Forbes, and you can follow him on Twitter at Bizball, B-I-Z-B-A-L-L, Maury. Maury, with that in mind, are baseball owners making money? Are the teams that are spending money, are they making money, or are the teams that are on a budget making money? Where does that stand?
Well, look, I mean, all of them are making money in one way or another. Right? There's no way. And that, I mean, all 30 of them. Now, look, they're going to cycle up and down depending upon what their, you know, their player compensation is all about. I mean, teams like the Tigers and whatnot spent quite a bit there for a while, and it's just hard to sustain that. But I think the thing that is largely getting missed right now, and this is a key component of it, owners are less incentivized now than they have ever been to win. And by that I mean, if you're making a lot of money, it used to be all tied to how you did in the standings. That's not the case anymore. There's so many revenue streams that are outside of winning now that, you know, you can make money by fielding basically a marginal team. And that, I think, is a real concern right now. I mean, you are not really driven to win if you're going, well, I'm making a bunch of money anyway. Do I really get that much back in return by sinking a bunch of money into player salaries? And that, I think, is a real concern. Like I said, I'm looking closely at attendance. It was down about 4% last year. Some of that was tied to a really, really cold and wet spring. Some of that was tied to the Marlins deciding they were going to count tickets properly under new ownership. And some of that was with the Blue Jays not flooding the secondary market for tickets. But look, I mean, that wasn't all of it. I think that there was a real sense of apathy by some of the fan base going into the season. And if we're seeing this now, which is a repeat and actually worse, I think, than last year, how is that going to affect attendance? And that is, so the gains that the owners might see in the short term, I think, come with long-term detriment. And so I think it's important for the league to acknowledge that.
All right, so you talk a little bit about the Blue Jays. So when I think about the Indians, how much does attendance actually play into the income of a team?
Well, it's still a super important revenue stream. Right? Let's not discount that.
Sure.
Behind television, it's the number, you know, it's the number one thing. But, you know, it really depends on the market that you're in. And so I think for the Indians, of course, it's important. And you look, guys, you guys are in a market, you know this. It's very difficult to compete with the Yankees or with the Red Sox or, you know, but in their division, they should be able to be competitive in windows, and they have been. And that's something that I think is really important. It's just difficult to sustain it year in and year out. Commissioner Manfred has said that he likes to see all teams be in a 5-year cycle. So you might rotate down for a little bit. Then you should be able to retool and basically be competitive again. The problem with that, guys, is there are some teams that are not doing that. I have a real problem, and I think that certainly a lot of fans do. When you see your team being out of the running and basically when spring training starts, I mean, that's not any position you want to be in, and I just don't think that that's healthy.
Maury Brown's joining us from Forbes, covers the business of baseball. Maury, what do you think of the way the Indians do business? Because on one hand, they're a team that's working in a budget, and they always tell you that, and, you know, here's what we're going to spend. Should they spend more? Should they spend less? How do they approach things compared to other teams, and what do you think of that way?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, it's no surprise that they've been really competitive over the past few seasons. How long they can sustain that is really the question. I just don't think that you can stay that way all the time. Now, you know, saying that, it is one of those things to where I would think that they, you know, should be still within a window. How much they're going to put into that is largely predicated on how the rest of the division is. You know, if the White Sox ever do drop the hammer and decide to go after, you know, let's say Manny Machado, That may change things, right? And that's a consideration I think that all the clubs have. How competitive is teams X, Y, and Z? Are they on the upswing or are they on the downswing? Are we better served, priming the pipeline with our prospects and picking a better target is largely dependent on what others do. So I think that they've done a really good job. I mean, that's been, shown as how they've done in terms of being competitive, not only during the regular season, but in the postseason. Last year was, of course, a bit of a change. How they bounce back from that is something that I think a lot of us are going to be watching.
All right, so once Machado and Harper fall, once those two guys end up going, what's the domino effect going to look like? And it is going to create kind of a weird spring training, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know if those two guys, this is the thing that I think should be concerning if you're looking at baseball as an industry, right? Mm-hmm. But Manny Machado and Bryce Harper shouldn't affect Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell. I mean, the pitcher's market should be what it is. And so it's really now, for those two guys, especially as pitchers and catchers are reporting, that's going to be a concern. But I think that maybe, those two guys moving, Bryce and Manny moving, might see some of the other position players start to move a little bit. But look, guys, here's another thing we haven't discussed, and I think it's important to note. Baseball, if I'm one of these clubs, how do I market myself right now? And nobody can market Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, and even with spring training starting. Season ticket sales are out. That's why I think that this is really a bad look for baseball. The players mentioned trying to make this move a little bit quicker as part of pace of play. They came back with a proposal that talked not just that, but a bunch of other stuff around the economics of the game. Ron Manfred said, look, yeah, that's stuff for collective bargaining. We need to talk about that for our next labor deal. I want to talk about pace of play. But look, they're making some offers, and that, I think, is a key indicator that they're not happy with how things are, and they want to see some movement in those areas. So, look, I said last year that I thought that this would be an outlier, and because it was such a strong free agency class. That's not been the case. That leads me to believe that we're going to see this again next year, and I just don't think that that's a very good look.
All right. So I just want to make sure I have this straight. So this is good or bad if you're an Indians fan and you're worried about Lindor down the road?
I think it's bad. I really do. I mean, I think in the sense that the players are still trying to figure out where their market is and what they want. And in that sense, I think that they're going, well, hey, how come I'm going to get treated differently than guys in the past? I'm worth this much. If I look at my statistics compared to my peers and they're getting paid X, I should be making that or more. And they're not seeing that, so they're holding out. And that, that just creates this bad catch-22. At what point, who has the leverage at a particular point? And I just think for a guy like Lindor, who I think, he's a fantastic player, probably should deserve whatever the market will bear. Well, that market has changed. And that, I think, just creates this, awkward position that we're in.
Maury, do you think the days of the 7-year $200 million, 10-year, $300 million contract, are those gone? And do the owners want them gone? Do the players want them gone?
Well, the players certainly don't want them
gone. Yeah, I would think they would love it, but they're not getting it.
Yeah, I think that, there's always a sense of whether the market continues to escalate and whether we get into, Giancarlo Stanton numbers and, we get into these $300 million deals. And I just think that it's very difficult to do that when they can be an albatross around your neck. And this is specific to teams like the Indians. I mean, look, you have to stretch that out over time. And what kind of value are you getting on the back end of that? Albert Pujols is an incredible player when he comes over from the Cardinals to the Angels. Is he going to be an incredible player at the end of his contract? Certainly not. And no owner or general manager signs a player thinking that they're going to get that kind of value at the end. Machado and Harper are different because they're so young, but I think that those days are done in the sense that the owners figured out, look, we may get value at the beginning of some of these contracts. We're not getting them at the end. Let's start investing in our younger talent, which, of course, is much cheaper for the owners.
Maury, last thing on our end here. Trevor Bauer, certainly a guy who has his own thoughts on most everything. Wins his arbitration with the Indians. Just coming out the last couple of minutes, he said he didn't like it at all. We're going to get into that next. But he says he's only going to sign one-year contracts the rest of his career. From a player standpoint, what do you think of that idea?
Well, look, I mean, the salary arbitration process is you know, it's uncomfortable. You know, you're going to, it's basically your boss telling you, we don't think you're worth what you think you are. And of course, you know, the agent is trying to make the counteroffer. It's worked in the sense that, you know, most of these salary arbitration cases get settled in advance of their hearings. You know, it, this is not a unique thing that he's talking about. If he's that unhappy with how it went, one-year deals, well, you know, actually that's probably a benefit for him. One-year deals are a heck of a lot easier for the owners to agree to right now. Trying to get extensions aren't. But that, look, when you say something like that, you're basically saying, I don't really see myself playing for the Indians at the end of this thing. When I hit free agency, I'm going to go look elsewhere. And then, you know, now look how the market is with that. So it is an interesting time for the players. Maybe the most interesting, of course, that we've seen in the last almost 20 years.
Maury, great insight, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, have me on anytime, guys. Thanks so very much.
Thank you, Maury.
Maury Brown from Forbes. You can follow him on Twitter at BizBallMaury. It's BizBallMaury.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.